It's different to my phone. Well, are you ready back there? Yeah, turn all three of them on. See, we're trying to do five. On Facebook, sermon audio, and YouTube all at the same time. And she had it working. You got it? Okay. All right. So, for those of you watching and those of you here, I didn't get to explain yet. We're trying something new tonight. Sermon audio has a new service where you can tie into other media at the same time and do it all live all at the same time, if you know what you're doing. So we'll find out. We played with it a little bit Sunday evening after service, and I think we may have it working now. We're going to use, if you're on Facebook, we're using my wife's phone as a backup, just in case what we're doing on the computer doesn't work this time. So there'll be two. There may be two videos playing on Facebook for now, but once we make sure the real one works, then we'll delete the other one. So my preference in this that this works because it'll open it up to more people. There's some people that would like to watch our live service, but can't because they don't want to get on Facebook, which I understand. So. Now they can watch us live, hopefully on Sermon Audio or YouTube, either one. We finished up the book of Jeremiah last time. And so I thought we would go on to the book of Lamentations next. It's fitting, I think, as we finished Jeremiah. It's only five chapters, so... I'm not going to read, I don't think we're going to do a chapter at a time, at least tonight, because we want to do an introduction to the book in particular. And if you remember, Jeremiah, and I didn't realize it, maybe I had a long time ago, but until I got to looking this up, but Jeremiah preached for 40 years before the captivity, before Jerusalem fell to the Babylonian army. It's a long time. He preached warnings of what was to come. And so that's a long time. And you see why, when you realize that it was that long, 40 years, you see why that there were times he got really discouraged with things. People weren't listening to him. And there was times he even got discouraged with the Lord because the Lord kept giving him things to preach, but the people weren't listening. And so he would get discouraged with the Lord on those things. Even though Jeremiah knew what happened to Judah and to Jerusalem in particular, even though he knew it was just because of what they did, because what God brought was justice. They got what they deserved. Well, actually, they didn't get what they deserved. They deserved hell for what they had done. But God still called them his people. So we know these people were saved. Maybe not all of them, but a large group of them were saved. The Lord referred to them as his people still, and his nation. But Jeremiah, instead of his fellow Israelites, his fellow Jews, he had a law for him. He lamented greatly over what happened. And so that's what this book is about. And it's one of the commentaries I read on this refers to each chapter as a poem. As Jeremiah writing a poem, five different poems on this matter. So, just kind of as more of an introduction here, Lamentations describes the funeral of a city. It is a tear-stained portrait of the once proud Jerusalem, now reduced to rubble by the invading Babylonian hordes. In a five-poem dirge, Jeremiah exposes his emotions. A death has occurred, and Jerusalem lies barren. And remember, we went through all that. Jerusalem was well known on the trade routes. There was a lot of trade through there. It was a wealthy city. Kings that were wealthy that were there. Their enemies even knew of the God of Jerusalem. You know, God had a temple there. God, that was God's house. That's where God's people were supposed to come and meet him at certain times and at their appointed times. And yet, they turned their backs on God, and they were even, the priests even, had allowed the people to worship false gods on the idols that were designed and built by God himself. It was a blasphemous thing, surely. Trying to skip over this. The historical background of Lamentations can be found in the time of Jeremiah. The book was written soon after Jerusalem's destruction. At the beginning of the exile, Nebuchadnezzar laid siege to Jerusalem from January 588 B.C. to July 586 B.C. It fell on July 19th, and the city and the temple were burned on August 15th. Remember, the Babylonian army burned the whole city, and not just the city, but the temple, also the house of God. Jeremiah probably wrote these five chapters before he was taken captive to Egypt by his disobedient countrymen, not long after the destruction. And remember that back in chapter 43 of Jeremiah, Jeremiah was taken captive, and him and his friend Baruch, that was with him, the scribe, they were taken captive and taken into Egypt with some other people from Judah, a remnant, a small remnant that was left. And after God had told their leader through Jeremiah that they were to stay in Judah and be good citizens, basically. And they refused. They were scared of the Babylonian army, and they left and went to Egypt. And God brought judgment on Egypt for it, for protecting them. He sent Nebuchadnezzar and his army to Egypt, and they wiped out Egypt because of these Jews that had gone there. And I think that's about all I wanted to say on that part. See if there was something else, but that's about all I want to say on that part. So let's start. Chapter 1 and verse 1. How doth the city sit? Or how does the city sit, solitary, that was full of people? How has she become as a widow? She that was great among nations and princes among the provinces, how has she become tributary? Jerusalem has been totally destroyed. And he compares her to a widow, you know, someone who's in mourning, someone dressed in black and is in mourning. The city, the remnants that are left there are in mourning. The whole, if you remember, back in Jeremiah, it tells us that when people come to Jerusalem after the siege, after the city was burned, it was a wasteland, and people that didn't know that it happened. The trade routes didn't stop. The trade caravans didn't stop. They kept going. And when they come to the Jerusalem the first time after it had been destroyed, they were all in shock, because when they were there before, whether it was months or years before, Jerusalem was a thriving city, a very wealthy city, a very popular city for them to stop. Now it's destroyed. And remember, I think, and this is my personal thought, but just from what I've read on things in that part of the world, Jerusalem, because the world knew how powerful her God was, that was the biggest shock, that her God would let this happen to Jerusalem. And back in Jeremiah, it talks a little about that. It talks how that even Israel's enemies were shocked. They knew that only God could be the one who did this to Jerusalem. Verse 2, she weepeth sore in the night, and her tears are on her cheeks. Among all her lovers, she hath none to comfort her. All her friends have dealt treacherously with her. They are become her enemies. Remember, one of the things God accused Israel of was adultery. And Jerusalem in particular, because remember, this was God's city. This is the city of David. This is the city where God set up his kings to rule from. This is where he put his house to come and meet with his people. And he says here in verse 2, among all her lovers, what's he talking about? He's talking about spiritual adultery. They had committed spiritual adultery. Remember, they had intermingled not just with marriage, but they had also made fellowships and alliances with their enemies who God told them not to, and they did it anyway. And it was those, if you see there, he says, among all her lovers, she hath none to comfort her. Her adulterous affairs with her enemies, where are they now? They were not there. You remember, none of them tried to defend Jerusalem. If they would have all banded, you would think, speaking militarily, if they'd all banded together, all those nations had banded together with Jerusalem, they probably could have defeated Nebuchadnezzar. But that's not what God had planned. And so Nebuchadnezzar basically went in one at a time and took out every one of them. But none of them were there to help Jerusalem. And even her friends, he says, have dealt treacherously with her. Her friends are traitors. They can't be trusted. They are become her enemies. Judah is gone to captivity because of affliction and because of great servitude. She dwelleth among the heathen. She findeth her no rest. All her persecutors overtook her between the straits. The ways of Zion do mourn, because none come to the solemn feast. All her gates are desolate. Her priests sigh, her virgins are afflicted, and she is in bitterness. Her adversaries are the chief. Her enemies prosper, for the Lord hath afflicted her for the multitude of her transgressions. Her children are gone into captivity before the enemy. Notice right there, everything that we saw Jeremiah preach in the book of Jeremiah, here's what we saw this over and over again. It was the Lord that hath afflicted her. You see that in verse 5? It was the Lord that did it. Over and over again, the Lord says that he did it. Why? Because of the multitude of her transgressions. Because of the multitude of her sins. And it was just you remember this wasn't the first time. Remember the Lord told them. He took them all the way back to their forefathers who left Egypt. And remember, as soon as they crossed the Red Sea, and the first time Moses went away to meet with the Lord on the mountain, right away, they gave up on the Lord. And that was their history. They had done that all along. And finally the Lord had enough, and now he's chastised them. And you notice in verse 4, he says, "Her priests sigh." Can you imagine being a priest in that day, in Jeremiah's day, and hearing Jeremiah preach all that day in and day out? Remember, most of the time he was going to the temple first to preach. And these priests were hearing, and they were mocking him, laughing at him, and accusing him of being a false prophet. And now it's all everything he said. Everything he said has come true. And now the priests, the men who read the scripture, the men who were most knowledgeable in the scripture, now they see that they were the false prophets and that they were the false preachers. It was a sad day in their day because they realized they had misled the people against the Lord himself. And from the daughter of Zion, all her beauty is departed. Her princes are become like hearts that find no pasture, and they are gone without strength before the pursuer. Jerusalem, remembered in the days of her affliction and of her miseries, all her pleasant things that she had in the days of old, when her people fell into the hand of the enemy, and none did help her. The adversary saw her and did mock at her Sabbaths. So the people, remember, they're reflecting back on how things used to be. And at some point during captivity, it finally clicks that, hey, we messed up. Not right away, but eventually it does. Eventually the Lord convicts them of what they've done. When he's done with their time in Babylon, they finally realize they messed up, and they know why. Remember Jeremiah, he wrote two books that we know of, and at least one of them was sent to Babylon. And so they knew what they had done. In verse 8, Jerusalem hath grievously sinned, therefore she is removed. All that honored her despise her, because they have seen her nakedness. Yea, she sigheth and turneth backward. Her filthiness is in her skirts. She remembereth not her last end. Therefore she came down wonderfully. She had no comforter. O Lord, behold my affliction, for the enemy hath magnified himself. Now we know that this enemy, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, and his army, the army of the Chaldeans that came and seized Jerusalem and overthrew her, we know they came from the Lord. But we also know that they weren't godly people. God doesn't always use godly people to punish others, does he? He sometimes takes the heathen and punishes his own people, and that's what he did with the people in Jerusalem. And you notice he says, "The enemy hath magnified himself." In other words, the enemy doesn't recognize that the Lord is the one who gave them their victory. They're glorying in themselves in this victory. The adversary hath spread out his hand upon all her pleasant things, for she hath seen that he had entered into her sanctuary, and thou didst command that they should not enter into thy congregation. All her people sigh. They seek bread. They have given their pleasant things for meat to relieve the soul. See, O Lord, consider, for I am become vile. The very holiest of things that God had given them, the temple and everything in it, they let let the enemy come in and take it. It's a shame on them. You know, they were given so much by the Lord, and they spoiled it. They ruined it themselves. They can't blame anyone else but themselves. And you stop and think about it. You see a resemblance here of what we're seeing in our nation today. We've lived a good life in this nation for a long time, and now that our strongest adversary has come against us. Remember, how long have we fought against communism in this country? Since the early 1900s, at least, that we know of, and now, you know, it's complex with our government officials. You know, there are people in our government that brag about being part of the Communist Party. There was a day where they would have been banned from public life, but yet, we just like Israel did with Babylon, let them in. And don't get me wrong, I'll say this again, America is not taking the place of Israel. That's not what I'm getting at. But there are similarities in what we see in them and in us. We're not, our nation as a whole is not God's people. God has not called America his nation. That's Israel. They're his nation. God's people are surely here. And we know his churches, his churches have taken a stronghold here, of sorts. We have freedoms in this nation that that our forefathers never had in other places. And you look around the world, you know, missions that we've supported and people we know that are in other nations that don't have the freedoms that we've had here. We're worried about losing those freedoms today. But it isn't ourselves that have brought this on us. It wasn't the Lord. Now, the Lord is the one doing it. But just like Israel, the sins of God's people in this nation is what's brought the trouble on us. If God's people would have followed him instead of going the way of the world, things might have been different. But we also know, also don't forget that that's the Lord's will too. And we know with the time coming short before his coming, things are going to get worse. We don't like to think about that because we've been so spoiled in this nation. We don't like to think about what could happen. But in reality, we don't know what tomorrow brings. It can all end tomorrow. We still, even as bad as it is today, it's probably going to get much worse at some point. The Lord may come, you know, he may give us a reprieve for a time. We don't know. We're not promised that, but he could. He could take us out before it gets worse. We could be gone here in a few minutes. We don't know. But we do know, especially from our study in Jeremiah, worldwide things are going to get much worse after he comes. But anyway, back to Lamentations, verse 12. It is nothing to you, all ye that pass by, behold, and see if there be any sorrow like unto my sorrow, which is unto me, wherewith the Lord hath afflicted me in the day of his fierce anger. Like I said, Jeremiah lamented greatly. He wept and mourned over what happened to Jerusalem. From above hath he sent fire into my bones, and it prevaileth against them. He hath spread a net for my feet. He hath turned me back. He hath made me desolate and faint all the day. The yoke of my transgressions is bound by his hand. They are wreathed and come upon my neck. He hath made my strength to fall. The Lord hath delivered me into their hands, from whom I am not able to rise up. And if you remember Jeremiah towards the end, at the end of the siege, when Babylon finally came into the city, remember he was in captivity at the king's house. He was imprisoned under house arrest. The king had treated him halfway decent and pulled him out of the prison that the former king had put him in, but he was still in prison and not able to go freely where he wanted. But then, even after that, when Babylon burned the city and the remnant that was left, remember there was different factions there at least that we know of. And they fought, and one of those won, and they took Jeremiah, forced him to go with them. He wouldn't give a choice. He was forced to go with them. And partly because they recognized him as a man of God, and thought God would protect them. And that didn't work for them, did it? God still come after them because they refused to do what he said. So he's talking about those things here where, you know, they've taken him and they're not giving him a choice. He's forced to go with them. The Lord hath trodden underfoot all my mighty men in the midst of me. He hath called an assembly against me to crush my young men. The Lord hath trodden the virgin, the daughter of Judah, as in a wine press. For these things I weep. Mine eye runneth down with water because the comforter that should relieve my soul is far from me. My children are desolate because the enemy prevailed. Now, he says, because the comforter. Now, the comforter here is not capitalized like it is in John chapter 14. But he's still referring to the Lord here. His comforter is the Lord. And he says, my comforter that should relieve my soul is far from me. He felt abandoned by the Lord. And there was a time where the Lord didn't answer his prayers, or at least not the way he thought he didn't get the reply that he wanted, but it was the Lord making him wait. It wasn't that the Lord wasn't listening to him. It's just it was time for him to wait, and he had to wait on the Lord. And sometimes the Lord does that with us. You know, there's times where we pray and we think, well, the Lord's not listening. But he's listening. It's just not time. You got to wait for his time sometimes. He doesn't always act when we want to. He makes us wait. Verse 16. We'll just go ahead. We got time. We'll go ahead and read the rest of the chapter. For these things I weep, mine eye. So we read that. Verse 17. Zion spreadeth forth her hands. There is none to comfort her. The Lord hath commanded concerning Jacob that his adversary should be round about him. Jerusalem is a mistress woman among them. The Lord is righteous, for I have rebelled against his commandment. Hear, I pray you, all people, and behold my sorrow. My virgins and my young men are gone in captivity. I called for my lovers, but they deceived me. My priests and my elders gave up the ghost in the city while they sought their meat to relieve their soul. And he's speaking third party here as this being Jerusalem. All these things, all these people, the young men, the young women in Jerusalem are in captivity. And he mentions here again, all lovers of Jerusalem, all her adulterous lovers had deceived her. They weren't there to help, remember? And he says, my priest and my elders gave up the ghost of the city. The priest and the elders gave up. The Lord wasn't listening to them. And the Lord said he wouldn't listen to them. Remember that? Remember back in Jeremiah where the Lord said that I'm done with them? I won't hear them anymore? Now, they're God's people. So we know God listened to his people, but and being omniscient and omnipresent, he's everywhere all the time. And what he just means is he's I'm just not going to pay any attention to him. You know, they can talk all they want, they can pray all they want, but I'm done. I don't care anymore. I'm not gonna pay attention to him anymore. That doesn't mean the Lord didn't love him, because he makes that clear later that he did love them, but they had rebelled so much against him. He was done, and he brought punishment upon them. Verse 20, behold, O Lord, for I am in distress. My bowels are troubled. Mine heart is turned within me, for I have grievously rebelled. Abroad the sword bereaveth. At home there is death. They have heard that I sigh. There is none to comfort me. All mine enemies have heard of my trouble. They are glad that thou hast done it. Thou wilt bring the day that thou hast called, and they shall be like unto me. Now, he mentions here, again, her enemies, Jerusalem's enemies, would not comfort her. Her adulterous lovers wouldn't comfort her. Her friends wouldn't comfort her. Her enemies heard of my trouble, he says, and they are glad that it has been done. Now, what's he talking about the enemies? He's talking about those who were against her. Those who not Babylon, but the ones around Israel, her enemies, her true enemies. Remember the Philistines and the Moabites and the Amorites and all those people. They were her adulterous lovers, but they were also her enemies.